Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. This is Catherine Cruz. Representative Ed Case has been back at home in the islands for the past 8 weeks, working remotely while the House has not been in meeting in person in our nation's capital recently because of this health crisis. We talked to him this morning about the federal funding meant to ease our economic pain, as well as the decision to postpone the military war games, RIMPAC, until later this summer. Congressman Case sits on the powerful House Appropriations Committee.
I was in Washington the week before last. That was a surreal trip back there through empty planes and empty airports to Washington, which was, you know, we were not socializing with each other at all. The vote on the floor of the House was a very surreal experience itself. But other than that, I've been home and sitting right where I am right now, which is in my back room in my house.
The headlines in the paper today talked about how states with the fewest positive cases of COVID-19 got more federal aid, and Hawaii was one of a handful of states that got singled out.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, we have definitely worked hard as a delegation to be sure that we in Hawaii have been able to fully access the federal emergency assistance and the CARES Act and the other legislation. But let's not forget that we have great needs here in Hawaii. The reason, one of the prime reasons that we have done so well from a public health perspective is that we have really shut down, and we have shut down our entire tourism industry, our number one industry. So there are needs that are great here in Hawaii, far greater than the rest of the country from an economic perspective, and those needs should be addressed. So the fact that we did the right things on the public health side doesn't mean that we haven't been impacted.
But it is kind of startling when you look at it that we got $2 million for every positive test compared to someplace like New York, you know, which just got slammed with the COVID fatalities and yet only got, you know, a small proportion.
Well, again, New York does not have the economic impact that we have here. And we, you know, New York was clearly at the front end of the pandemic, so it didn't have as much time to prepare and get measures in place as we did here. So I think we did the right things from a public health perspective, but they were tough and they had major impacts. We have, for example, the highest level of small businesses in our entire country. And so small businesses throughout our country have been more severely impacted by the pandemic, and our small businesses here are dependent on tourism. So that's a double whammy right there. So we worked very, very hard as a delegation with our local financial institutions to get that aid out to our small businesses, and we're pretty successful at that.
So how are you looking at the decision-making here on the local level with reopening up some of those small businesses as early as this week?
I take this from a public health perspective. I take this from a what does the medical community, the best medical advice counsel, and starting from that point, how can we start to reopen our economy that preserves the advances that we have made on the public health side with COVID-19? So I take a pretty cautious approach on reopening our economy, and I don't want to take unreasonable chances that we will have a significant decline again in the public health side of things, because, you know, number one, if that happens, you know, people get sick and die, and medical facilities are overwhelmed, and all of the public health consequences that we were concerned about. But number two, if that takes our economy back down, the result of that is going to be far worse than had we done it cautiously and reopened carefully to start with.
So do you think we're adequately prepared as far as testing and contact tracing?
No, but then again, nowhere in the country is adequately prepared today on full testing, full contact tracing, at least what the medical professionals counsel is necessary to really be able to reopen to a substantial extent where you actually can test and you actually can carve out safe zones throughout the state where you have a quite low chance of contacting COVID-19, or where you can feel safe. And let's remember that that's key, not only from a public health perspective, but also businesses are not going to be able to function, especially tourist-related businesses, if people don't feel safe getting on planes and getting off planes on the other end, and if we don't feel safe with our tourists coming back. And so we are closer to prepared for that than much of the rest of the country. But that doesn't mean we're entirely ready to just, you know, go 100%, because we have adequate testing, adequate contact tracing, adequate surveillance, adequate hospital facilities that can handle any kind of a surge. None of those things is yet where it should be.
And any ideas how we can better screen our visitors coming in or our return residents coming in from travel abroad?
First of all, I believe that, you know, I think we all realize that the solution that we have arrived at thus far, which is, essentially a self-enforcing quarantine, getting off the plane for both returning residents and tourists, is largely not working. It could work if people actually did a quarantine, but the evidence is pretty overwhelming that many people are simply ignoring that. And we do not have, at least as we sit here today, the resources to devote to really 100% enforcement. And so where that leads me is to the conclusion that we ought to be doing that testing, that tracing, that enforcement, if you will, before people even get on the plane to start with. And so I'm definitely pursuing an initiative under which the airlines would need to test at the point of departure, not at the point of entry. People are here, get out of the airports, it's too late, they're already here, versus saying to people that get on a plane in San Francisco, look, we're going to do a quick temperature check of you before you get on this plane. And if you don't check out, then you can't get on the plane. I think we're going to have to move in that direction.
We just saw a decision by the military to postpone RIMPAC and to focus on, I guess, on the water exercises versus allowing a lot of folks to come on shore. You know, I think people here in Hawaii were watching the situation in Guam with the aircraft carrier and are just a little concerned. But at the same time, there are businesses that rely on the military, because it's our number two industry after tourism. So how are you looking at that?
Well, I think the military did the right thing. I think that I did not agree with those that believed we should cancel RIMPAC altogether. RIMPAC is an incredibly important joint exercise between us and our allies that is absolutely necessary to our country's national defense in the Pacific and in Indo-Pacific. And so there were major consequences to not conducting a RIMPAC at all. But to move from the standard RIMPAC of, you know, thousands of folks on ships and otherwise coming in for, you know, shore leave in Pearl Harbor and coming in and out of Pearl Harbor, that was not going to work either. That was simply unsafe. And I think the military acknowledged that from the perspective of both the people that were participating as well as the civilian community and moved to an all-sea RIMPAC, which is, you know, the functional equivalent of social distancing in the military exercise context, and to try to get the training that it needed in terms of really a more of an onshore virtual RIMPAC with an active offshore component with very, very little contact back with Hawaii, I think was entirely appropriate all around.
And we have seen the effect of this virus, you know, on the cruise ship industry. And when we look at our military readiness and our aircraft carriers, you know, that is a concern about how we keep our military men and women safe when they're in close quarters like that. And given what we know about COVID-19 now, about passing the virus on when you have no symptoms, and we have, you know, a fit force out there. So it is a little worrisome.
Well, the military does have to find its own way through COVID-19 and adjust to that reality. I believe it's trying to do that. It certainly, like the rest of us, has not been perfect in how it has anticipated or approached it, and it has been in some ways making it up on the way. But I certainly think that it has come, you know, a long, long way in a very short period of time to handling the reality of how do you maintain a ready force across the board, whether it be, you know, land, air, or sea, which requires in many cases close quarters, while still maintaining a public health precaution and addressing those situations where you actually do have COVID-19 tested service members. I think that things that they're doing are entirely appropriate. You know, full masks on aircraft carriers, much more frequent disinfected carrier-wide testing on a regular basis. Those are the things that are going to be necessary going forward for our military. But, you know, let's also acknowledge that the overall statistics that the military has presented indicate that it has a much lower level of infection and a much higher success rate once people are infected. So they do seem to be taking the necessary precautions as opposed to, you know, COVID-19 taking over the military.
That was part of a conversation that we had with Democrat Congressman Ed Case this morning about COVID-related issues.